again, this symposium is about implementing IPM in, at the landscape scale for soybean aphid, and my role is just to give you a brief intro to this. So soybean aphid, Aphis glycines, was found actually in July of 2000 in Wisconsin, and then was very rapidly discovered through some emails and phone calls in eight different states. So it had obviously been there a few years before its discovery. It's a classic invasive species. It's coming from somewhere in Asia, perhaps China, Japan. And with all the trade and tourists and direct flights now, we can go directly from places like Tokyo or China to Minneapolis, Detroit, and Chicago. And you could imagine live plant material being brought in somehow and moving either aphids or aphid eggs. Also, if you look at the aphis interceptions at airports, Diptera is one of the groups, and another group is the old Homoptera. So aphids and scales are very easily transported, and we have an increase in goods coming from Asia. So it's no surprise that we're getting a lot of these species coming over, and this was just another one hitting field crops. Once soybean aphid got here, it found ample secondary hosts. This is just the U.S. soybean production area. And if it's coming in the Chicago area or into the Minneapolis area, you don't have to go very far before you find millions of acres of soybean, and it obviously spread very rapidly from that point of introduction. And a real key to colonizing North America is that the primary host was here as well, at least one species, Rhamnus cathartica. And this is, if you don't know what Rhamnus is, if you live south of I-80 and you don't have a lot of it, it's kind of a shrubby, it can be in a tree line. It can also be fairly large, the size of a tree. It has berries on it, and it does have little thorns. And it's most apparent in the early spring and in the fall, when it often comes out early, so it's one of the first green things. And in the fall, it's one of the last green things. In fact, it never really does change color. So these are some pictures from the East Lansing area. Places like Michigan, New York State, parts of Minnesota, Wisconsin are full of this in tree lines, along the edges of fields, along the highways. And everything here that you see that's green, it's in a subdivision and along a street, is buckthorn in the fall. And this would be the host that the aphid leaves soybean for later in the fall, say September and October. There would be mating and then egg laying on this particular host. And here's a picture that Dave Voigtland took. He's sitting in the back there in the red jacket. So this is an aphid that is intent upon laying eggs. I didn't pick the more dramatic photos that Dave has that show sometimes hundreds of eggs on buds from the last couple of seasons. So you can see that these eggs are very tiny. They're actually fairly hard to find unless you have a good, a large overwintering population. So when you find eggs, you know that you have a lot of aphids out there. And this is how they get through the winter. If we did not have buckthorn for them to lay eggs on, we probably would not have had establishment of this pest. Soybean aphid is a typical aphid species. It has the type of reproductive biology that allows it to increase very quickly. It's parthenogenic, it gives live birth, and it has telescoping a generation, so grandmothers contain their grandchildren inside of them, essentially, developing. So the reproductive time is very short, and in the lab, under optimal conditions, it can be as short as a day and a half or 2 days. So these can reproduce very, very quickly. They also, under certain conditions, produce many, many alates partway through the season. And this is a picture of a field in Saginaw County, Michigan. This was the really first big outbreak year in Michigan. And these plants have been covered with aphids and sooty mold and honeydew. And there were, at that time, an average of 7,000 aphids per plant. And I thought that was a lot. Later, as we've been counting, many of us have encountered populations of many more thousands. I think my record is 30,000 aphids on a plant. Brian McCormick is counting a lot of plants too, and I don't know what his record is, but there can be many, many more aphids on a plant than this. If you multiply 7,000 by the plant population in this study, and 90% of these were alatoid nymphs, you can generate potentially 800 million alates per acre. And in fact, a lot of these did fly away, and that was the year that Michigan, we presume, infested the Toronto area, and it stopped a baseball game, and there were a lot of problems with aphids attacking people. So you can actually get thousands, millions of aphids being swept up into the air and moved. As a result of that movement, aphids have pretty much moved across most of the soybean growing area of the U.S. and also three provinces of Canada. And this is a picture from the USDA pipe site. This was originally started as a soybean rust site, and in the last couple of years, aphid data has been put onto this site. And this is the August 26, 2007 picture of aphid populations in that field season. So where you see purples, those are aphid populations that are over threshold. And let's see if I can use my mouse here. There we go. So we had tremendous aphid populations this year over in Quebec, down into New York State. There's a lot of buckthorn here, coming in around the Cleveland area, and then again over in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, parts of Illinois. And there was kind of a little black hole around Michigan where our populations were fairly low. But we have had outbreaks maybe every other year, although every year there is some place that does have an isolated aphid outbreak. There have been very large outbreaks in 01, 03, 05, and 07 is probably more of a moderate type of outbreak. So the immediate response to aphids was to do efficacy trials to see how we could control them, and we do have a number of products that are fairly effective, so growers do have options. As far as what do aphids do, they affect almost all components of yield loss, including reducing plant height, leaves drop early, you get reductions in the number of flowers and nodes and pods and beans per pod, and also changes in bean quality. So depending on when those aphids infest and how many are actually there, you can get some really dramatic effects, up to 40 to 50% yield loss, maybe even more in some of the organic production. The other thing that happened pretty quickly was a lot of the extension entomologists got together and met a couple of times and came up with a consensus recommendation for aphid management. And at that point, there was a guess of a action threshold of 250 aphids per plant. So it was a per plant threshold. And there was an extension bulletin published with the soybean industry with a quarter million copies. I'm kind of exaggerating, because it's early in the morning. There was a quarter million copies of that distributed, so just about every soybean producer in the U.S. and parts of Canada actually received this. Later, that threshold was validated. This has been published by Dave Ragsdale and his co-authors in JEE. I think that's a 2007. And this was looking at yield loss in relation to cumulative aphid days across a number of different application costs, and yield goals and market prices. So that threshold, by the Ragsdale calculation, my mouse is, here we go, averaged 273 aphids per plant, which is within the 250 zone. So we've kept the threshold at 250 aphids per plant. The other thing that people have tried to do is try to help define how to scout for aphids. We do use whole plant counts. I like to count aphids, so I enjoy it. I find it very relaxing, but most people don't like to count aphids and kind of scoff at me, and a lot of scouts kind of roll their eyes at me. So there's been a number of attempts to do some quick scouting techniques. Aaron Hodgson developed speed scouting, and that was validated in a number of different states. So this is a quicker presence-absence way to look at aphids. And Brian McCornack is in the process now of doing trying to refine node scouting, counting just certain nodes of the plant. So we have a pretty decent threshold, we have scouting and sampling information, and we have pesticides to use. The impact of soybean aphid, if you look at how soybeans were originally treated, basically they were sprayed with herbicide, and they really didn't get a lot of insecticide use. So this is the data from 1999, the year before we actually knew that we had aphids, and you can see the insecticide use in some of these key states is fairly low. And this is in contrast to the 2005 NAS survey, where you have 18% of the acres in Indiana, estimated 42% in Michigan, 30% in Minnesota. And we're using a lot more insecticide, not just one or two products. We have seed treatments. We have a lot of foliar treatments. So we do have recommendations for better use of insecticides. We have these thresholds, and we can manage aphids on the local level. But our question a few years ago was, what about some of the broader impacts of aphids in the landscape, and how does the landscape impact aphids, and how do we move beyond insecticides? So this RAMP grant was looking just at that. The objective was to look at things on a broader scale. And so what you're going to hear today are some of the results of some of the individuals that have been working on this. So as far as impacts on aphids, one of the more interesting talks Emily will give, and it's about fungicide, Carrie will give, it's about fungicide applications and how they impact aphids. We not only have soybean rust now in the U.S. and the thought about applying fungicides for rust, but there's also a lot of industry folks that are promoting fungicide applications for plant health, either on corn and beans. So we have a lot more fungicide use out in the landscape. And we will have a talk about how those fungicides actually affect aphids. And then there will be several talks about the impact of predators on aphids. Mary Gardner has done some work looking at the landscape and the predators and the aphid numbers. And then Takuji Noma, who is here, yes, he's going to talk about some of the tritrophic interactions that he is looking at. And then George Heimpel is going to talk about the classical biological control release for aphids that was done in 2007. And then we're going to also look at soybean aphid as a vector. And specifically, these are two pictures. These are actually from Michigan. This is bean common, mosaic, and dry edible beans. And this field was 100% infected. And then on the far side, you see some pumpkins that were in front of an unnamed chain grocery store. This was at the end of 2005, and they kind of had this lumpy appearance, and they were also infected with virus. So we do see a lot of virus transmission in these bad aphid years. And Emily will really give that talk. As far as IPM alternatives and soybean aphid, we will have a talk about the IPM alternatives and how they affect yield. And then Kent Olson from the University of Minnesota has prepared a talk about a survey that he did of growers on perceptions of damage and control. Kent isn't here, so I will give that talk. And finally, we have sort of the bottom line, the economic impact of soybean aphid damage and management. And Scott Swinton and his graduate student have been working on that at Michigan State. So in the first part of this session, we'll have the IPM, the economics, and the soybean rust. Then we'll have a break, and then the biocontrol and the virus vector talks.